I'm prepared to do anything I can
to play my country again. Do it then. What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Oof, you think all the hype, it's overblown and just one massive advertising, money-making, soulless venture, and then you get some good games. And
yeah.
You get more good games. Friday, that was a good game. And then you get Liverpool at Vicarage Road and you're thinking, I can't spend my Saturday morning. Can I spend my Saturday morning watching Liverpool play Watford? And I keep an eye on it, and then it's a classic. And then surely I'm not going to watch Manchester City against Brighton. Surely I'm not. And yet it's kind of started and this is an interesting game. And before you know it, Kev, you're watching Manchester United at Old Trafford and thinking to yourself, bloody hell, that was good. That was good weekend's football. That was interesting.
Yeah.
And that's not to
mention. Sky got the better of the deal of the weekend, didn't they? Yeah. Over BT.
They did,
Sky won BT now, isn't it?
Though I did enjoy, I have to say, I am a fan. I know some people aren't, of Steve McManaman and Glenn Hoddle on Colcom together, the two of them.
I like that, Kev. Yeah, I take. Yeah, I'm not really up on the uptake on that yet. I'm not really in on it, just the dual co-commentators now.
Right.
I'm not.
I mean, you should be.
Should I?
More jobs for your sort?
I've done a game, a couple of
games. Twice the number of jobs.
Dual co-commentary, yeah.
Who with?
John Hartson.
Did you get a word in?
Yeah, barely, yeah. No, John was good, actually. John was good. I think you end up bringing each other into it a little bit as well when you're doing it.
Good conversations break out, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was good. I was a fan of it. I enjoyed the Man City game. It was, not to be a total hipster here, but it was intriguing.
Yeah?
Yeah. No, I did find it good.
Intriguing. That's not a word you'd use around. That doesn't sound good about what you're watching a game of football and it's intriguing. Sounds like absolute, pants.
Well, we'll talk later on about City. We'll talk to Pat Nevin. Diego Costa's done an interview today in the Mail. And Pat was at Stamford Bridge as well. You were at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
So we'll get on to the weekend's Premier League football. Stephen Ward, one of many Irish players shining for Burnley, which was good. But Martin O'Neill, the news of the day is that Martin O'Neill was in town naming a provisional squad.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
39 players. Probably, would you normally whittle it down to 27? I think that's normally right. So there's probably going to be 12, maybe certainly at least 7 or 8 you would have thought that's going to be omitted from his original 39. But I think the positive thing was, we've all spoken about really coming in, was Sean Maguire. Sean Maguire moving over to the Championship over there at Preston now. So it's a big one for him as well, I think, for him coming into it as well. And Martin O'Neill explained today why he felt Sean Maguire had earned his place in the squad.
Because I've seen a bit more of him, for a start. I think that's the most important thing. I think I said to you at the last press conference that... the time that I saw him play, which is pretty important for me to see, I didn't think that he was particularly impressive in the cup final in the game. I've seen him since. I thought he was excellent in the game against Dundalk, really excellent. And so he is. He gets, when I say he gets a call up, he's into a very large list of people. But like the way that I've dealt with a lot of young players, I like them to come into the squad if they can, if they do make it. And there's no guarantee of that then they can get themselves into a group, feel a wee bit more comfortable with it, that eventually when they do get a chance, if they do, that they are that they're not nervous, that they've been around the group for a little while, and then take that chance and give them the best possible opportunity of trying to do well when they finally make a debut. But I know there's general excitement about it. I think your second question may have been to do with why has he been called up now, and that's, I've just given you the reason. And I don't think that I've been I don't think I've been behind the scenes and not picking a League of Ireland players, if that's what you're surmising. But that's not really to do with that. It's more to the point that I want the players to feel comfortable in the group, and I hope at some stage or another, players like him can get a chance, because if you can score a goal, and you can score a goal at a very, very decent level, then you hopefully will have a chance at international level. It's not an easy step up.
No, I'm sure it's not.
No.
How big is the step up?
Massive, yeah, it's a big step.
Biggest issue?
Huge step. Yeah, I think that'd be, and again, getting
what is the biggest issue?
I went in level he was playing at there now, so when I first got in, I would have been playing championship level. I think when I first got into the squad, I was in awe of a lot of the people that were in the squad at that time, the Townsend, Cascarinos, Houghtons. He's probably not got that those sort of names that were synonymous with my youth, I suppose, when he gets in there. But I think it's a step from a technical point of view, everything. He could do with a goal. Martin O'Neill spoken about if he scores goals at a good level, then he'd be with a chance. He's not scored yet for Preston, so this is the one thing he probably needs. But I said the other week he played really well against Sheffield Wednesday, so that's his next step. I feel anyway, get himself scoring regular in the Championship.
Has he played since for Preston?
No, different game at the weekend. They drew 0-0 away at Leeds, but they went down to 10 men. And he changed things around where he would have gone a bit more defensive, Alex Neil at Preston at the weekend. So he was sacrificed. He went with a different system. And that was one of the reasons why he didn't play at the weekend. And of course, then going down to 10 men, he didn't come off the bench. But he will get game time over the next few weeks. And hopefully for him, there's only 6 forwards in the squad as well. So that's another thing that's going to play, or certainly an advantage for him as well, because of the lack of serious depth. Devin McGoldrick's in there, who scored at the weekend. He scored 3 goals this season.
Yeah.
So it's good for him. We have Daryl Murphy scored at the weekend as well, another one. We haven't got a lot of goals in the squad, so we know that. Jonathan Walter, Shane Long, Kevin Doyle. You would feel as though when the squad's whittled down, we spoke about it, I think he'd probably be in there. I think he'll probably go with the 6 forwards, and it's worth his while. You would think it's worth Martin O'Neill's while to do that, to keep him in there, yeah.
Okay. What else was O'Neill talking about?
Well, he spoke about Greg Cunningham as well, as another one. We had Greg on the show, didn't we? And Greg's someone who...
Very intelligent, smart guy, really good player, good technique.
Captain of Preston North End this season. Well, certainly with Tom Clark out at the moment, he will captain the side at the moment. But Martin O'Neill says he's been hearing good things about Greg Cunningham.
Again, I've seen a lot of Preston over the last couple of years, and he has been picked before, not come through. A couple of my coaching staff have watched him play, and they've been particularly impressed. So that's good news.
Yeah,
it's good news. And you said the intelligent lad. He's certainly someone who I didn't expect to see him back so quickly. He broke his leg last season, so he's come back flying pre-season towards the end. Another one who really impressed last week, and he'll be vital if Preston are going to do anything this season from the club point of view. But from his personal point of view, he's spoken openly about his desire to get back in the squad because of the injuries that he's had. It has set him back. He was certainly a player that you would have expected to go on and have a 10-year, perhaps even longer international career with the ability that he's got.
I remember, how many caps does he have? Because I was at one of the games he made.
Oh, very few, very few, Joe. Very few. It's just with the injuries that he's had.
Yeah, it's a number of years ago now, obviously, but I was at one of the games he played in. It was at the Aviva, certainly. I suppose it doesn't really matter. Either way, he came on and instantly you just saw technique.
Well, he would have come on for me, Joe, I think we might have spotted. He would have come on for me, so you might have seen, technique coming. Technique going off and super supreme technique coming on.
Just about to say, suddenly we had someone on the ball who was giving it and taking it and getting us playing, which obviously I retract now. It was a continuation of the footballing ability at left back. But either way, he came on. He was 18 or 19 at the time, I think 19. He was involved with City at that stage. Yeah. Came on and whoom, the left foot looked good. He was composed. And like you said, if you told me then he would have not have been in the picture, you would have said it would have to be down to injuries. And obviously it has been. So it'd be good to get him back.
Yeah, horrific leg break when he went on loan to Leicester. So that was huge for him personally. But Mancini loved him. Even Trapattoni loved him as well. And he was, again, Stephen Ward's come in and done a great job.
Trap knew a player, Kev.
You did. He certainly did.
He knew a player.
You're not wrong there, Joseph. You're not wrong.
Any last O'Neill clip?
Well, he spoke about Aidan McGeady today, and Aidan McGeady scored at the weekend again. You know, certainly with a manager at the moment in Simon Grayson, and knows full well from Preston last season. But Martin O'Neill said Aidan McGeady should have good vibes about the Georgia match since he scored 2 goals on his, Martin O'Neill's, first game over there in Georgia.
I think there's something in that. I think that there's that players do have teams where they feel as if that they can do no right, and conversely, they feel as if they can do no wrong. Aidan will have great memories of that, of course. It was a great, great start for us. His second goal was just mesmeric, and those points were every bit as invaluable as any point that we got in the rest of the qualifying group. So, from that viewpoint, I think he'll have great memories of that. And if that's not a spur to him, I don't know what would be.
Okay, very good. Martin O'Neill in town there. So we'll park the Ireland stuff for now. Pat Nevin is reviewing the Premier League weekend next.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
Newcastle are probably doing the correct technical things, getting players in there. They launch into the box. Here's Spurs, and Dele Alli's finished it. Dele Alli, a full stretch, reaches out the left foot, and he's poked that pass from Elliott. Spurs take the lead against the 10 men of Newcastle. It's relief all round for Tottenham. They have found a way through. It's Dele Alli. It's Newcastle 0, Tottenham 1. They get into the D of the penalty area. Here's Spurs with Davies. He tries a shot, and Davies has poked it in. That's surely game over. Ben Davies, the defender, fighting his way through. I think he actually put that in with his right foot, despite being the left back. Game over here, that's for sure.
Ashford to charge forward, brings it towards the edge of the area. Back inside to Lukaku, off the post, and into the back of the net. And Romelu Lukaku makes the instant impact. A stunning counter-attacking goal from Manchester United. And Lukaku is up and running in the league. It's Manchester United 1, West Ham United 0.
And the free kick is taken by Mkhitaryan to Lukaku.
2-0 to Manchester United at Old Trafford. Well, they have a new hero now. 2 for Romelu Lukaku on his league debut. And surely that is all 3 points on the opening weekend for Manchester United. There might be a chance for third. Martial! 3-0 to Manchester United. The slide rule ball through to Anthony Martial. And the substitute, calm as you like, slides the ball under Joe Hart. Comprehensive on the opening weekend for Manchester United. They lead West Ham by 3-0.
Oh, now Pogba. Lukaku wants it in behind. Pogba gets the shot off. It is 4-0. Paul Pogba from just outside the area. And he deserves that goal.
It's a rout now. Manchester United 4, West Ham United 0. Paul Pogba.
Oh my God, that montage wouldn't end.
Yeah, you started to talk over Nathan Murphy.
How dare
you know, that's just disgraceful.
Wow, Pat Nevin, come in now.
Oh, come in now. Yeah, sorry, I wasn't going to jump in front of Romelu Lukaku.
No.
He'd have barged me out of the way.
Indeed, we'll talk Lukaku later on. You were at Stamford Bridge on Saturday.
I was, and it was an absolutely incredible start to the season at Stamford Bridge. I think most people knew that Chelsea had one or two problems, but we didn't realise it was 7, 8 or 9 problems all hanging on at the same time, which it was by the end of the game. There were one or two positives to be taken back from the game, but I think what we've all been saying for quite some time now, that squad's nowhere near deep enough. I don't know if you noticed, did you notice the bench that Chelsea had there?
Antonio Conte was asked after the match by Oliver Holt if he had deliberately named a very young, inexperienced, unimpressive bench to send a message to the owners. And Conte got quite angry in the press conference. And to be fair, I don't think he actually had too many other options.
He had none. I immediately, when I read the team sheets, I looked at it and I thought, he's having a laugh. He's doing I'd almost call it a Jose. Jose used to do that now and again to show how weak the squad was. And then I thought, who else would they bring in? And there wasn't anyone. Mm. There really wasn't anyone else that you would say was a hell of a lot better than, or even more experienced than the ones that he put in there. Maybe at a push, like Remy. But did you know he was still at Chelsea?
Oh.
Exactly.
Amazing, isn't it?
So in actual fact, that was the limit. I mean, there's been a lot of things. You know, they've got rid of a lot of players. Maybe some of them should have kept. I think they should have kept Nathan Ake. He was the obvious one because he's like three players. He's a centre back, he's a left back, he's a left midfield, and he's a centre midfield, so he can cover you all over the place. But they let him go. But they just haven't brought in enough numbers. They've got rid of three centre backs and brought in one. And last year they didn't have European football, and even then it was tight. So, you know, the management of it at this point in time doesn't look great. When I say management, I mean in the wider sense. But they're aiming at the end of the transfer window. And at the end of the transfer window, they've got a strong enough squad. And it probably needs 3 or 4, get the injuries back and get the suspensions back. And then figure out the riddle inside the enigma that is Diego Costa's situation. And then they might be okay. But by that time, I don't know if you'd have had a look. Have a look at Chelsea's games that have coming up just now. They have got one hell of a hard programme coming up. And they better get themselves together quite quickly, or else, you know, others will be too far ahead, even before the seasons get right underway.
It starts with Spurs. We have the game live on Sunday. Yeah.
Pat, was there that negative vibe around the ground at the weekend? We spoke about this last week leading into the season. You spoke about the depth within the squad and perhaps maybe it's a necessity to bring one or two signings in. But what was that feeling like before the game? You do get that vibe sometimes when you turn up at New Stadium that something is amiss, I suppose, really.
Well, that was slightly covered by the fact that Chelsea were parading the championship trophy. So they got a little bit of a lift from that. But every Chelsea fan I talked to said the same thing. Look, there's not enough depth there. We need some more players in. I mean, they've started the season there and they've not got Diego Costa up front and Hazard's injured and Matic has just gone and no more John Terry anymore. And you think, well, that's a massive part of what that group was. I mean, arguably, the two top goal scorers have gone for a kickoff or are unavailable for a kickoff. So you take that even before anything else. And yes, there was a concern, but I think most Chelsea fans felt that they probably still had enough just about to get, you know, over the hurdle that was Burnley. And you know what? They probably would have had they not had Cahill sent off. But you can't, it's all what ifs.
Yeah.
You have to be able to cope with that. Chelsea in the past with 10 men against them would have had a more spirited reaction. The reaction was awful.
That's the worrying thing, maybe. That's the thing which maybe points to a wider issue here, which might worry Chelsea fans.
I think there's a technical reason for it. And again, it doesn't really... Everybody wants their kind of a story about the feelings and all that. But in actual fact, there's a lot of players that try to play. I mean, Kevin, you'll absolutely understand that. All trying to play the ball up to the single striker, who on the day couldn't trap a bag of cement, right? So the ball was coming off Batshuayi all day long. Now, he's not a hold-up player. He's not a link-up player. He'll score your goals all day long, but you've got to provide the chances. But he's not going to be a link man. Yeah. And they kept on, the ball just kept on. It was like hitting a wall, kept on coming back. And you could see the rest of the players losing heart a little bit because they couldn't see any route out. There was no get-out to give it to Hazard. He wasn't there. The young lad that had come on, Boga, you know, nice enough young lad and nice looking player, but you know, Premier League, first game, miles away from what you need there. So I think there was a real disheartened feel about the whole group because they didn't believe that as a group they were good enough. Then they brought in Morata and the whole thing changed. Absolutely and utterly changed. Now it wasn't just that he left it because he's a good player, you know, and everyone think, oh, he'll win us a game. No, you can actually now play. You can link up play. You can actually work as a unit and as a group. And everyone started playing better. So it was technical as well as everything else.
Yeah, he looked amazing. I mean, the flick on for the Luiz goal, the intelligence, and then the difficulty of that flick on to get that right and then score a goal.
Well,
that's quite the impact.
When I was chatting to people after the Community Shield game, and he was getting pelters. He missed a chance at a back post, which we talked about last week, and he missed a penalty kick. And he was getting absolutely hammered. And I was watching it from high. And I thought, that guy's movement's fantastic. Absolutely brilliant.
What does he do, Pat? Does he run channels or is it short little darts?
If you watch the technical way you're supposed to and you're told to run as a centre-forward, right, he does all that. So you come short and you move and you spin. And he does all that sort of stuff. But he does it at times when he drags a player out of the way. And it's pure textbook stuff. Now, pure textbook stuff should be easy. Yeah, because everybody knows what the textbook is, but he does it with a little lilt, with a little change, with a little shimmy and a bit of movement. It's massively intelligent and it's every part of it. He'll go and spin in behind when he needs to spin in behind. He'll go and do a curved run into the inside right position when he needs to do that. He'll hold up people. He'll be clever, intelligent. He is absolutely top quality. I have no idea if he'll score as many goals as maybe, you know, Costa would have or Lukaku's going to. I don't know, but he's a better technical player.
Yeah, well, I think you're lucky maybe when you mentioned Hazard there being out. When you get Hazard coming back into the side, Pedro, these are the sort of players that's going to be able to pick these sort of passes out for this sort of movement. I remember watching Man United a few years ago when Van Gaal took over, and obviously they signed Romelu Falcao, who come in with a big reputation. Of course, he wasn't quite fit, but when you watched him live, he was very clever with his movement. But because United, the way that they were playing was quite negative, it was always coming inside, it was slow and lethargic, never getting it into him. Morata's a sort of player that needs quick ball played through to him, play through the lines you speak about, turn, instant balls being played through him, balls over the top to him. I think if he gets that sort of distribution played into him, I think he will score goals.
That's not even an if. That's going to happen for him because Cesc Fabregas is hanging about. So that ball's going to get played in there. interestingly, in the talk of all the negativity of Chelsea, we all know that we shouldn't be ignoring Burnley. Well done to the ginger Mourinho. He was absolutely fantastic. He stopped Fabregas playing. He stuck two players on Fabregas and really, really gave him no space whatsoever. Gives Fabregas space and he'll play down Morata all day, and he will continue to do that when he gets a lot of that space. But especially when they had the extra man, Burnley, he knew what to do. There was only one area of creativity, maybe a little bit from William, but there was only one area where it was going to damage was going to come from. And for a long period there, well done. He just stuck men on that man Fabregas and never let him move. So it was good technical stuff from Burnley.
And we've got an early contender for goal of the season from an Irishman as well, Pat. You know, Stephen Ward coming in from left back as well. What a strike.
Oh, I mean, does he score many like that?
he was in shock afterwards.
I was trying to think of who was feeling like the weirdest of it all. You know, Chelsea down 3-0. The negativity of the champions getting hammered like that. And I thought, no, actually, the most surprising moment of the entire game was the fact that Kante actually never tackled Stephen Ward when he went through there. Yeah. He completely lost him. And I thought, wait a minute, that's a weird planet we're living on, because he doesn't miss tackles. But he timed it perfectly. Kante was scared to tackle him, and he smacked it in the top corner. And I was just talking to everyone around me, just saying, look, you know, this is deserved now. This is well done. This is well organised. You're up against a team that aren't well prepared.
Yeah.
And the reason why they're not prepared, that makes me sound as if I'm having a go at Conte. No, it's club preparedness. There's not enough players there, simple as that.
It was interesting watching the Conte body language at times during the game as well. One, he's wearing a tracksuit, you know, I mean, I'd say he's a very dowdy.
Joe is quite superficial, Pat. You know, he likes to judge people on how they look.
And by contrast, Mourinho looked magnificent at Old Trafford with his white shirt and the tan, and those hollowed out eyes were back to their best. He didn't look as miserable as he was last season. And I looked at Conte slouched in his tracksuit, and I thought, I don't know. And he, at certain points in the first half, the camera cut to him, and there was almost a faint grin on his face. Now, maybe he was just squinting in the sun, so I can overread into these things, but he was just looking on, almost bemused by the performance.
I think, and I wouldn't say bemused, but I think you got everything else correct there. I think you got everything else right. For the guy who was running up and down touchlines and, you know, manic movements and moving everybody for every second of every game last season, he was static for the vast majority. Kept on looking down, you know, all the way through that game. Nope, no movement, standing there, looking semi-slouched, you know, as if to say, right, I know what the problem is, but there's nothing that I can do about it right now. I was kind of hoping they would do something, which was bring Morata on right away. I mean, at 2-0 down, maybe even at 1-0, I was wanting to bring Morata on, because you need to do something now, because you're in trouble, you're losing 3 points. But, you know, he either decided or wasn't allowed to do that until the last half an hour. When I say wasn't allowed to, you know, the guys in the white coats that tell you that he's only got half an hour in him, and you almost have to listen to them these days in the modern game. And I think it was a bit of that, because it was 59 minutes when he came on. He stole an extra minute. But it looked to me like a guy who thought, right, I know what the problem is here. There's nothing I can do to fix it. But had the three players that I wanted to be bought in by now, I could have fixed it. And you compare that, it's lack of control. It's psychology of every psychology. Forget about football. It's just life. If you lack control, then you've got a problem, and that means you can't make good decisions. Whereas Mourinho, utter control at the moment. He said he's got 75% of his targets this season. Add that on top of what he bought last season, and you look at that Manchester United team, and again, it's a phrase I think I used to you last week. They look like a Manchester United team physically now. Like a Jose Mourinho team physically now. And boy, they are going to bar teams all over the place. And by the way, they can play as well.
Yeah. As Conte was on the sideline not doing very much, Diego Costa was watching the match in his home in Brazil with a Daily Mail journalist who, it seems, had just doorstepped him. And Costa said, well, I'm not up to much, so come on in. And he talked at length about Conte. I respect him as a great coach. He's done a good job and I can see that. But as a person, no. He's not a coach who's very close with the players. He's very distant. He doesn't possess charisma, which I found surprising. What's happening now at Chelsea is sad. The text message, so this is the text message that he got to tell him from Conte, he was no longer wanted. The text message, I understand it when a coach wants a different player. There are ways of going about it. And he was asked if anything was said to him after the FA Cup final, and he said no, he knew nothing about it. You don't do it by text message. You should be honest and direct it to someone's face. I was with the Spanish national team, alone in my room when it came through. It was a shock to get it like that. I was shown it to my teammates, and they could not believe how Conte had done this. And I agree with him. I just don't understand Conte's decision to text him.
Unless, of course, what Conte says is true, which he was told last year.
I just maybe just add into that as well. Maybe the when you speak to any of the guys that worked with Fabio Capello, that worked with Mancini at City, Trapattoni were another one. They were three Italian managers that I would know of, four Italian managers, should I say, very, very distant, kept the distance from the players, didn't want to really have any sort of relationship with the players. It was all about the work on the training ground, the work in towards a game, but everything else from a personal point of view was kept at arm's length. That's how I would perceive. I mean, Ancelotti, it seems to me, would be certainly a different sort of character to that. But those four in particular, it seems, are very much in that sort of mould.
To be honest, hey, Sir Alex Ferguson wasn't at all the parties with all the guys, trust me. Neither was Jock Stein. Neither was some of the greatest managers I've ever known.
Yeah.
Look, it sounds as if I have a dig at Diego Costa. It's not that. Look, he wasn't Conte's type in the end. He didn't feel as if he can trust him. They tried to manipulate says there's a big story around this, but in actual fact, when you strip it away, the bare bones are almost the same as the stories you get with almost every player when it's time for them to move on. And it's just a bit louder when it's Diego Costa that's involved, because there's going to be a bit of mess around it. You know, Coutinho, pleasant guy, but we're going through kind of the same thing. He wants to go. He's not playing. Go and train in the reserves or don't turn up with the first team. Okay, so it's not as noisy and there's a bit of mudslinging. But that's them just trying to organise a move and structure the move. And, you know, some players will do it one way, slyly, quietly, manipulatively. Other players will go and shout and bawl about it and talk to a guy for the Daily Mail. There's lots of ways of doing it. But what I try to do is resolve the situation. I think it's probably the one guy who's probably misread it and got it wrong is Costa. The reason being is that he's chosen the wrong club to do that with. If he's holding Chelsea and Roman Abramovich to ransom for his value of, what is it, 25 million, 30 million now, because he's running down his contract, do you think Roman cares?
Mm-hmm.
I don't. I really don't. So Costa's saying, I'll sit on a beach. It's a fairly good chance that Roman will just send him over a bottle of champagne.
Yeah.
Saying, enjoy it. By the way, it's knackering your career.
Yeah.
So, and the difficulty, the other thing is, can I put on my union head now, the PFA and the players' position, I'm thinking, well, I need to go and get some resolution to this because nobody's benefiting out of this. And Chelsea aren't benefiting. Costa isn't benefiting now. So get them, knock the heads together as quickly as you can. But I don't see a way out for Costa because he doesn't want to go anywhere except Atletico, and they're not allowed to buy him.
No, not till
there's
January.
There's no simple way out. Yeah, there's no simple way out.
Yeah, it's true. He's working with a fitness coach every day at the moment, Costa, to try and stay fit. Mention of Morata's movement, by the way, just a very brief tangent, but I do remember as an earnest Manchester United fan going over a couple of years ago to Old Trafford, and Michael Owen was at Manchester United at that stage, and I really had not rated Michael Owen since about 2001, you know, just the injuries, just thought he was a one-paced, no good, why have they signed him? I don't understand. And he came on as a substitute with about 15 minutes to go. And the movement from Michael Owen was stupendously good. He was making 4 or 5 yard runs, I would say, every 20 or 30 seconds. He wasn't being found with many of them. But every time he somehow, and I was behind the goal, I was looking from a distance, he somehow created an alleyway each time for a potential pass, which was like a legitimate alleyway that, you know, he created the space and the angle. And I remember thinking, oh my God, this never comes across on television.
Yeah, even though he probably lost a little bit of pace with the injuries that he had, he never...
All of it.
Yeah, probably, yeah. You maybe argue that yourself. But he never would have lost that instinct and that movement that he knows instinctively how to get him into the positions to score goals.
And I never knew he had that. I thought he was just pure pace.
Oh, he definitely always had that.
Yeah, but he would have. He had the pure pace, but he would have had to make two or three movements to get himself into space, and then his pace then can take over.
I sat there at Old Trafford feeling like an idiot. Like, of course.
Well, you are anyway. Well, I mean, that's for another day.
Well, Kev, you've just been talking about Falcao. It's exactly the same, isn't it? Falcao was exactly the same. Even when he went to Chelsea, I kept on watching and thinking, the movement's absolutely perfect. It's all about the last ball, the final ball. The other problem is, and it's another player who was very similar at Liverpool and then again at Chelsea, was Torres. Fernando Torres was like, you know, go and try and make the same moves. Mm. You're wasting your time, mate, because every time you'd play for Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, there's no space to run into because everyone's sitting on the 18-yard line. So that was kind of his game was kind of
back
ruined
to play,
by
back to goal. Yeah, so wasn't,
and,
yeah.
And he wasn't great, a fantastic back to goal player. So you need to get the right guys for the right situations, but the ones that are adaptable and can do a number of different things. And I suppose that's why I'm kind of waxing slightly lyrical about Morata. I think, I'd have him every day of the week because he's actually got the power as well. He's got the natural striker's instinct. He's got the intelligence and movement. You know, the ones that I've got, the ones that you kind of just arrive there, you know, there's so many of them, you know, McCoist, Rush, there's loads of them, right? You know, Aldridge, all the same. But the ones that have got that and they've got this mega intelligence about them as well, other parts of the play, there's not that many of them. Kind of Morata's a wee one, a bit of that as well.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about Manchester United and Spurs before you go, Patsy. Kev did the game from Old Trafford for us and you were at St James's Park. Spurs 2-0 winners at 10 minutes to go. You were saying pretty much like a training ground match. Helped in no small part thanks to Jonjo Shelvey. So Spurs, you probably weren't going to learn a whole amount new about Spurs. They're still a very, very good first 11, 12, 13 players.
Yeah, the positives are they've got good players. Dele Alli will always score if he's given opportunities, as will Harry Kane. Eriksen's still a class act, still my favourite in that team. I think they're a shadow of the team without him playing in the side. The centre-backs are kind of ropey at the start. So these are all little niggly things. They're fine, they'll be okay. The thing that would concern me if I was a Spurs fan with the full-backs, waxing lyrical about the youngster that started. And I know like one of your fullbacks goes and scores an absolute cracker of a goal, and you're going to say, what are you talking about? But do you know when you've got, you know, the previous two fullbacks there, and Danny Rose was hammering down one side, and you've got Kyle going down the other side, do you think, wait a minute, you're giving everybody else space? That wasn't happening with them this time. And I'm not sure that they're going to have that sort of power from those sort of wide areas. It was a big, big part of their game. And if I was worried about anything, that would be my slight worry for them. As not in they're going to have a terrible season. Is there any chance of them really chasing Man City and Man United? Right at this moment, I'm saying no chance whatsoever.
Kev, Old Trafford?
United, superb. We spoke about it yesterday. They were in top form. Pat spoke about the power that's within that side there now. The combination play between Matic and Pogba, that was the thing that we were looking for. We spoke that before the game, John, didn't we? See how these two, sitting in a two with the three ahead of them, United played 4-2-3-1, which when they've played in a 4-3-3, they've probably got the best out of Pogba. Not necessarily saying he'd been excellent, but that's where he seems to thrive or seems to get better when he's playing that role. Played deeper alongside Matic yesterday, but Matic, almost as if he'd just given the free role, the licence to go and get forward, play to his strengths, and Matic just mopped everything else up. So it was an excellent display from United,
On the heat map last night in Match of the Day 2, I mentioned earlier in the show, they had Matic's touches, and he was not consigned to some vague area around the centre circle. He was everywhere, 86 odd touches, Pogba had 84. So, you know, chemistry is pervasive throughout life. People have chemistry, players have chemistry, and the chemistry in that Manchester United midfield was never quite right last year. It was forced.
Yeah.
And it looked natural to you yesterday. It looked like this was coming easy to them all.
Well, there's a couple of occasions as well on a pitch, you know, Pat will note when you see players on a pitch and the understanding, the little, you know, the pat on the arse or whatever it will be as you're walking back into position, a little high five. There was three or four of them throughout the game, Pogba just giving Matic a little nod, just his little no, and you felt something growing when you were seeing them together there yesterday. Again, you said Matic's touch map, yeah, he was all over, but you could see immediately Pogba, he is a bit loose at times, and you have to allow him to be a bit loose. But when Pogba was running onto the left wing or the right wing, Matic just sat, and he just knew his role, knowing full well what Mourinho as a manager would want from him as well. Just went and just sat in the middle and just said, right, go on, I'll let you do that. And then Pogba then would come back into position, and it was a little touch. And you could see it a few times, and it was like, yeah, they know they've got a good combination together. Now, again, it's one game.
Sure.
West Ham, and you know, we've been here so many times before when you get blown away or you're overhyped something. But
it's a while since Manchester United blew anyone away.
Yeah, definitely. Matic was superb. Matic was superb in the role that he played yesterday. Yeah, and but overall, I think in having Matic, Rashford then grew into the game. Yeah. Mkhitaryan was in the game. Mata certainly wasn't at his best, but he had an influence on the game, and then that in turn, then Lukaku off the up front, they just had so many plus points for them yesterday. But I think it was largely down to position that Matic had taken up. Yeah,
sounds very positive, Pat.
Yeah, I've went right at the start of the season. I've went from Man City and Man United second, And it made me think about it yesterday. Right. But well, the best thing it made me think about, I mean, I've been looking forward to the real Jose against the real Pep. We're going to see it now. And we're going to, and the lovely thing is there's such a different style to both of them. And it is a rerun of Real Madrid versus Barcelona. It really is. Because Real Madrid become a much more powerful team when Jose was there and Barcelona were Barcelona. So it's exactly the same. Man City will be a lovely team to watch. They'll be beautiful on the ground. And Man United will be absolutely powering into them. This is going to be fantastic watching these two go each other this season. And the fact, I mean, I'm going to enjoy what's on the pitch, but the reaction when Jose Mourinho is under pressure and he's got an opponent that he needs to fight against, then all the mind games start as well. Pep's going to have to deal with that as well. He didn't always deal with it well last time when he was up against Jose. So you've got all the stuff on the pitch. You've got the different systems. You've got the Manchester rivalry. You've got them two, possibly the two best managers around. It's going to be brilliant watching them.
Yeah.
I think the one thing is, Pat, is just off it, just on United there as well. At times, West Ham, what they did at the start of the game, they started to play a high line that was freeing up Lukaku, you know, giving Lukaku space in behind. It's not the thing to do. Then they kind of copped on a little bit, dropped a bit deeper. But then you got Mata with a few clever runs, diagonal runs, and Mkhitaryan then was coming into the game. They had a... You know, the clever players came into it then when they lacked some certain amounts of space. That was the telling thing, the balance that he's got. I spoke before the game. I still think they could maybe have a little bit more pace throughout the tide. But overall, it was that cleverness of Mata at times and Mkhitaryan that was that was providing the guile for the sides that was allowing, maybe sucking players out of position that was freeing up Rashford then to go and do his stuff. There was a real good balance to the side the way that they played yesterday.
Yeah. And Lukaku seemed to rise to the occasion, Pat, and think, do you know what? I'm interested in this kind of atmosphere. I'll play in this stadium.
I've watched him play with, you know, a few teams now, Chelsea strip, watched him play West Brom strip, Everton strip, whatever. He looked at home in that red strip. They looked as if, that's me. This is where I should be. You know, there are some guys like that. The ego's there, the belief's there. And you know what? I've seen more from Lukaku and more what he can be. My complaint has always been the same. It's never changed. You can do more, mate. Yeah. You can work more. You can lead the line more. And you look at him in that game and you think, oh, that could be coming now. Mm. Absolutely. And whether it's the fact he's wearing the red strip, whether it now feels as if, look, I am one of the best players in the world and I want to show it. And by the way, I need to show it every week. And he's also got Mourinho, who, you know, he's had a go at him once when he was at Chelsea. Now we'll have another go at him. He's a scary individual. If you get the best out of him, he will be one of the best. But it's keeping him with the right mindset for the entirety of the time. And I mean, every game, and every minute of every game. There was plenty of it there at Manchester United. He could be a god there.
In his post-match interview as well, the first thing he said was how impressed he was with Martial and with Rashford. So he never quite had that pressure on him at Everton. And interestingly, Jason Burt from The Telegraph, very reliable journalist, has tweeted that Conte didn't actually want Matic. Because we heard Conte maybe say Matic was sold without quite his knowing, or certainly sold to Manchester United. But Conte didn't want him, didn't rate him, thought he was done, and United offered the cash, and that's how the deal was done, which is interesting.
His replacement's bought. Bakayoko's bought. Mm. I mean, Matic wasn't playing. If you're not going to drop Conte, so they're not going to play three in the midfield in that sort of position. Bakayoko wasn't bought for the fun of it.
Yeah.
He was bought as a replacement, a similar type of player, younger. He felt with more energy as well, I suspect. So, you know, Matic having around as backup for a wee while until you got, you know, I think what the suggestion might have been subtly was, yeah, sell him. But sell him once Bakayoko's fit, or at least as close to the window as possible. And that would have made sense.
Yeah, and not to Manchester United, maybe.
There is that.
Yeah. Pat, lovely to have you back. That Skype worked beautifully as well.
Fabulous. I'm amazed by it.
Technology. Thanks very much, Pat Nevin there. Who we have on every Monday was at the game for us yesterday. Interesting point about the Spurs fullbacks.
Actually. Yeah.
Although Danny Rose still has to come back. Indeed, we'll talk about the Spurs spending. There have been some very interesting but contrasting interpretations of whether or not Spurs actually spend money or not. There was Wayne Rooney for Everton and a few more bits besides. As a United fan, I'm allowed to get ahead of myself, says the moaner, but Pogba and Matic reminded me of Vieira Petit. Oh, yeah. We're back in just a minute.
Off the Ball.
Home of the Saturday panel. Every Saturday from 1.
Thanks to Air. With Air Sport and all the BT Sport channels now free with your Air broadband bundle.
Okay, there's about 20 things we want to get in before we go. There'll be some overflow into tomorrow night because it was just one of those really interesting weekends. Like, we haven't even touched on Liverpool, but Rooney, mentioned before the break, scored the goal, looked lean.
Yep.
You saw him pre-match in his suit.
Looked happy.
Happy.
Big smile.
Smile, yeah.
Yeah, and I think we even spoke about this over the last couple of weeks in signing. He looks happy and... Mm. And that's something you can't say about him the last few years at United. I know there was a lot of pressure on him. I know he maybe felt like a little bit too much. Wasn't scoring the goals that he'd been scoring in previous seasons as well. But they just looked a little bit of an air about him. A bit of a twinkle in the eye again as well. And, yeah. You know,
the main man again.
Player. Yeah.
Centre of attention. And I only saw the highlights. But, I mean, it's been a while at Manchester United since Rooney's touch was that sure and sharp.
Yeah.
Ball out of his feet. You know, really concentrating the passing. Really, really good.
Back, yeah.
And the run for the goal.
Yeah.
And he looked a bit leaner.
Yeah, I'd say that. Say that.
Very promising.
I would say that, yeah, it is. Good for Everton, good sign. And particularly if they can get that Sigurdsson deal over the line as well this week, this does look likely for them, then they've got a squad, as we said, top six is still going to be a big ask for them. But yeah, they're on the right way, yeah. Pickford apparently play well as well at the weekend.
Danny Rose, it is your understanding, you may have heard on the grapevine here or there, that Danny Rose walked into the dressing room after giving his interview to The Sun, where he talked about the terrible wages and can we start signing on some players I don't actually have to Google, which was a hell of a line, to be honest. I thought it was good. And he walked into the dressing room and the reaction he got from his fellow players was positive.
Very favourable, yeah.
Round
of applause by all accounts, yeah.
So Danny Rose walked in and got a round of applause for calling out Daniel Levy and Spurs and their non-spending ways, which is, look, what a moment.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like suddenly Danny Rose walked in. He's like Jim Larkin. He's going in there. He's the head of the union. Thanks for speaking out for us, Danny, they all said. An amazing thing. So I'm seeing various interpretations of the Spurs number game. So Nick Harris on Twitter, you were looking at this as well. Mm. And he made the point very simply that... the number of clubs that pay higher wages than Spurs, there's 11 of them. United, Barcelona, Man City, Real Madrid, Chelsea, PSG, Bayern, Juventus, Arsenal, Liverpool, Roma. And he said there's also 11 clubs who actually have a higher income than Spurs. And he was saying it was the same clubs except Borussia Dortmund instead of Roma. And he was saying Spurs spend 50% of their wages are on... Spurs spend 50% of their turnover on wages. 50%.
Yeah.
So that all seemed to kind of tie in that Spurs are about where they should be. They're about the 11th richest club in the world. They're spending what they should. Ken Early in the Irish Times wrote a piece, certainly looking at more recent figures.
Yeah, Nick Harris's figures were for 2015-16, weren't they? So they were prior to that season. So yeah, that's the one thing probably worth mentioning within that, isn't it?
So Ken Early in the Times made the point today that the Champions League money, which tops Spurs up to about 300 million, and TV money, that changes things quite dramatically, and that even if Spurs suddenly paid all 25 men in the squad 100 grand a week, that the wage bill would come to 130 million, which is 43% of the income, 300 million. So actually, when you look at it in those terms, there's a strong argument that Spurs are nowhere near the other clubs when it comes to the percentage of their turnover being spent on wages. Everton are perilously high. They're something like 67-68% of their turnover in wages.
I believe so, yeah.
So that's actually a bit risky, you know. If Daniel Levy's talking about this bubble, and it does suit him to talk about this bubble, but Everton potentially are spending too much of their turnover in wages. But contrasting points in Spurs, Daniel Levy's quite well paid himself, 2.6 million a
highest
year.
Paid. He's the highest paid director in the Premier League, I believe.
So
certainly one of them anyway, yeah.
So you're getting slightly contrasting figures there. Certainly on the Nick Harris figures, it looks okay for Spurs. It looks like they're doing things about right. Like Harry Kane on 100 grand. Kane must be looking at Lingard on 130, Pogba 160, Hazard 200, Aguero 220.
Özil's on 200 plus as well, isn't he? Yeah. There's a number. Rooney on 300 over the last few seasons before moving to Everton now. Probably still on more than at Everton even now. So there are a number of things, and it doesn't take away, I think, a player in the club. We're looking at maybe the bigger picture and say, Tottenham are doing it right, but a player's not thinking that. Harry Kane, is thinking in his head, and he's 20 goals plus over the last three seasons. There's only two others. Is it Shearer and Henry that have done that? I believe so. That have scored 20 plus goals three seasons on the bounce. Look where Shearer, look at the level that Shearer got to during that spell. Look at the level that Henry got to during that spell. Mm. Harry Kane is at that level now. The level, from a goal scoring perspective. Then you're looking at Dele Alli, and the one who Henry Winter, I think, said to us when we were talking last week, Toby Alderweireld, probably the best defender in the Premier League over the last two seasons. Now all of a sudden, he's looking at Virgil van Dijk potentially moving for huge money. John Stones on probably double his money. Yeah. All these sort of players. So regardless of what the figures are, and you look at it, particularly with the injection this season that's coming into the Premier League and even last season, then Tottenham are underpaying the players.
Danny Rose is looking at Kyle Walker getting double what Danny Rose is getting at the moment.
Yeah.
And Rose, exceptionally good player, really, really good, and a big part of what Spurs do well.
Totally, yeah.
There was a very good piece by Daniel Taylor in The Observer yesterday. It's worth checking out. You'll get it on the Guardian website, but it told a story where Ferguson basically had the line that hip surgery was preferable to negotiating with Daniel Levy. That was their line. And it seemed they were so miffed by the Dimitar Berbatov saga.
Yeah.
Remember the drama of Jim White and Berbatov suddenly appearing last minute? That when Scholes retired, they really wanted Modric. They saw how good Modric was. It was clear for everybody to see. Fitted the bill as a potential Scholes replacement, the passing. And still, even though they knew Modric was going one way or another, they did not want to get involved with Levy. They were just sick of dealing with Levy. The other point as well Daniel Taylor made is Levy's just insistence on going down to transfer deadline day.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the one that we're saying. It's 44, nearly half, 44 deals he's done in the summer transfer market since Levy's gone into the club. 20 of those were done after the season had started, and 17 of that 20 were done deadline day.
Wow.
So he believes he gets better value once the season starts. The longer he can, or the as late into the transfer window as possible, he believes he's going to get better value for those players.
Yeah.
But in turn, the flip side of that is, you're not giving your manager the best chance to work with those players. You're not giving your manager a chance to have that good pre-season with them. He feels as though that the clubs at the top, like the Cities who have done the business earlier this year, like the Chelsea's in recent seasons, I suppose, maybe not so much this season, but United, they pay a premium by getting the deals done early, and he will never do that. You spoke about his wages before, the $2.6 million that he's on a year. I would have thought that is in relation to what savings he's making at the club as well. He'll be on certain bonuses, make no mistake about that.
Did you ever meet him?
No, never met him. Yeah. Never met him, no.
Pochettino was asked about him yesterday, and Pochettino seems like just an incredibly dignified fella, and it's hard to know if he was just giving out the party line or if he meant it genuinely, because people are worried Pochettino's going to go, that he'll outgrow Spurs. But he was asked about Levy, and he said that Levy is an incredible businessman. He's been to Cambridge, knows more about business than I'll ever know, understands football inside out, and I trust him implicitly, effectively. And what he says goes, and will work to his parameters and seem to be happy enough to go with that. Now, I doubt
that's towing the right line, though, isn't it? There's no way he can speak any differently.
I doubt he was in the dressing room when Danny Rose got a standing ovation. I'm upgrading this to a standing ovation, not just applause, standing ovation.
Yeah, we'll go with that one then, will we?
Yeah.
I can't see Pochettino being too upset with what Danny Rose has said. I really can't. You know, he's got to maybe, as you say, toe the line, maybe reprimand him. But he didn't seem too unhappy when he was questioned on Danny Rose's comments. He didn't seem too upset with it. Mm. It suggests to me that he's like thinking, Danny Rose is probably saying, to an extent, what I'm thinking, not necessarily from the wages perspective, but we want to get players in that's going to give me the best chance to go and win the Premier League. They've been so close over the last two seasons, haven't they? Mm. Third was it the year before when they probably shouldn't have been a bit close to Leicester when they blew it at the end of the season. Last year, you feel they were in with a great chance, just Chelsea blew everybody else away with that great run they were on. So I just feel as though that Pochettino wouldn't be too unhappy with what Danny Rose has said there, because I think he's just maybe putting it in everyone's mind from the manager and the players' perspective that they're probably underpaid, and from the manager's side, he wants to be able to get those players in early to give them the best chance.
Yeah. We're pretty much out of time. We haven't even touched on Liverpool or Manchester City or Arsenal on Friday. I think the best thing to do is probably press pause on that and get stuck into them tomorrow, because the Liverpool stuff is very interesting. The zonal defence thing
Yeah.
We'll talk about Liverpool in more depth tomorrow.
Arsenal as well. And Arsenal. Bloody, conceding goals, yeah, zonally.
What's the biggest issue with zonal defending?
Well, the biggest issue is zonal defending. I did a little bit of analysis, actually, at the weekend on Arsenal's goal that they conceded. And if you then look at the position, Lacazette was the wrong side when he's supposed to be blocking. I think it was Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain tried to get the block on zonally. There was three defenders lined up. Sorry, there's four lined up across 6 yard box between the width of the goal. Three of those were in the back half of the goal, so they left only Danny Welbeck at the front half on his own. So you can see the zone is not spread equilaterally. That's the problem that you're going to get. It's about anticipation, it's about seeing runners, body shape, all these sort of things. I wouldn't be in favour of it because there's no accountability. If it comes into your zone and you don't go and win it, couldn't get there. Whereas if you're marking someone, you are nailed because he's your man and he's got in front of you. Semi-zonal with the way that I would have liked to have worked when I was playing, where you'd have two or three in certain positions that would variably, one maybe on the in the middle of the 6 yard box, in the middle of the goal, one at the front, perhaps one at the back, and then the rest go and mark.
Yeah, makes sense.
It makes sense because you're filling a lot of areas. Yeah. And then if someone gets away, gets a free run and scores, then you've got that accountability as well off the back of it.
Earlier on, we asked you to identify the missing name from this piece of classic football commentary.
It is 52nd international appearance. Is entrusted with the responsibility of taking the penalty that could send Ireland into the quarterfinals of the World Cup.
It was, of course, David O'Leary. And congratulations to Sandra Thompson. You have won yourself, Sandra. Very nice indeed. A €600 one for all voucher. Kevin Kilbane and I are available to be taken out for dinner. If you missed out tonight, we'll give you another chance tomorrow. And remember, giving blood saves lives, so consider becoming a blood donor. See giveblood.ie to find your local clinic and follow #missingtype. Tomorrow on the football show, we will 100% come back to Manchester City and Liverpool and touch on Arsenal as well. Really good start to the Premier League season. We'll have, hopefully, I'm not going to say it out loud, JP, and jinx it, but we'll hopefully have an interesting hurling guest tomorrow on the show as well. See you then.
Give him a ball and a yard of grass. He'll give you a move for the perfect pass. Give him a ball and a yard of spice. He'll give you a move with guiltly grace. Rat-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap-tap
Welcome back to the show. We're here with Linda, who is just two questions away from her dream.